Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Wednesday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. Frank Vogel discusses Russell Westbrook's role at practice on Tuesday. And we make big, bold second half predictions for the Lakers. All of that coming up on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Want to thank everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. We get this thing up for you. You can find it wherever you find your podcasts in the wee hours of the morning. So no matter when, Andy, people need their Lakers content, their Lakers fix, we have got them covered. So we appreciate that. Reminder, subscribe to Locked On Lakers on YouTube, and on non-game nights especially, you can get access to the podcast and any breaking news a lot faster that way. So we on Tuesday's show, we kind of went over the first half of the season, picked out some players we thought were disappointments, some players we thought were surprises. On today's episode, Andy, we're going to look forward to the second half of the season with some second half predictions. But before we get there, Russell Westbrook has really been making a lot of headlines lately, talking about his role, complaining, I think is a fair word, that it shifts frequently. It's not the same from night to night, and expressing some frustration.
I would say, to make sure that it's most accurately presented, I don't think Westbrook has been initiating the complaints about this. However, he is not shy about seizing upon any opening to express this opinion.
When asked about what's going on, whether with his play, with any inconsistency, he will be quick to point it out. Yes, it's not quite. Hey, Russ, what did you have for dinner? Let me tell you about my role on this team. Like, it's not quite like that. Let's talk about this, because Frank Vogel was asked really at length about Russ Wednesday at the Lakers media availability. No, Tuesday, right?
Tuesday.
Lakers media availability before they leave town for Wednesday's game. And it felt to me like, Andy, that he was sort of defending the coaching staff while trying to acknowledge that, yeah, it's been a big adjustment for us. What we're asking him to do on our team is different than what he's been asked to do in the past, because he plays on a team with LeBron James and he's going to have the ball in his hands less than he is used to. His usage rate for that, for example, is one thing, is definitely going down. So broadly speaking, Russ is correct. His role here is different than what it's been in the past.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Frank Vogel noted that Russ had been dealing with cold-like symptoms, but he was tested and it was negative. So at least for the time being, there's no anticipation.
Tested for COVID, right.
Right. I don't know if there is such a thing as a test for a cold.
No, for flu. I mean, you can test for all kinds.
Sure. But I mean, let's be honest. Nobody cares about a flu anymore. I mean, there are like 1,000 different things that Russ could test positive for. And all people are going to be concerned about is COVID?
Because
that's the one thing we know is going to keep him off the court. So again, I think
he's got Ebola. I don't care. Does he have COVID?
Exactly. You know, what I thought was interesting about it was the idea of playing alongside LeBron James. It's not just the idea that LeBron is ball dominant, because, you know, he played a season alongside James Harden. And James Harden is a guy that has the ball in his hands a lot. I mean, I think he's been accused of pounding the ball over his career a lot more than LeBron's been accused of pounding it. You know, you played alongside Kevin Durant several years. Durant's one of the best scorers in NBA history, which means by definition, he's going to have the ball. What I do think, though, is different about this for Russ with LeBron, beyond the particulars of what goes on the court, is that this offense is, at the end of the day, built around LeBron. And Westbrook has never played with anybody that has the ball in his hands as much as LeBron, who also has LeBron's stature, where his stature, at the end of the day, if you got to choose between one or the other guy, you know the guy is going to be LeBron, rightly. Like, even in those days in OKC, when KD won the MVP first, it still felt like the two of them were on equal standing, you know, in those Thunder teams. Like, this is the first time where I think Russ is playing alongside a teammate in this type of role with that type of dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. And what I found really interesting with Vogel's response is that trying to sort of balance the reality of what Russ is going through versus the reality of what we're asking from him. And, you know, you get the impression from Westbrook that he has been asked to do different things from night to night. It is never the same thing twice. And, you know, he was asked in a bunch of different ways. And I know you asked him pretty directly near the end of it. You know, do you agree with him? Is he right? And what Frank said was that, like, you know, the environment changes around Russ every night. This is where the instability, another way that the instability that the Lakers have had this year is impactful, because, you know, what Russ is asked to do does change if LeBron is playing, isn't playing, if Monk is in the lineup or not, or, you know, is THT available, is, you know, are the other point guards available? Like, all of that does influence how a player, whether Westbrook, Davis, LeBron, or anybody else, is going to do stuff. And so you combine structural change that he, you know, look, you're going to have to do things a little differently this year with us, with, you know, the lineup instability. And it probably does seem to Russ like he's being asked to do different things from night to night. And the coaching staff is probably reminding him, hey, remember, we need you, you know, we need you moving, cutting off ball, or, you know, hey, remember the, you know, the some of our defensive principles or whatever it might
guard
be.
Guard someone.
But like some of that stuff, you know, when, you know, you need to be here in the dunker spot, which is not a spot that, you know, that Westbrook had spent a lot of time in previous offenses, you know. And so what could seem, you know, Vogel was pretty clear. I don't think, without throwing Russ under the bus, because that's not what Frank does, I don't think we're asking him to do different things from night to night. But it's not hard to feel, in the grand scheme of things, in the total context of everything that's going on and the general disappointment around the way this has worked and the way that Westbrook has played, why he would feel like he's being given inconsistent messages and being asked to do something different from night to night.
Well, I mean, there's also, too, just Russell Westbrook's nature is not somebody that I think is naturally adaptable, adjustable, flexible, sort of as a self-starting thing. I'm not saying that he resists everything that you're ever going to ask him to do, but I think Russell Westbrook is very wired to be like Russell Westbrook. And, you know, it's worked
pretty well for him to this point in his career.
And he has said things along those lines this season. And, you know, there's times where you see this with a lot of other players. We've had a running joke for years about when the Lakers, about a decade ago, brought in Ramon Sessions because they were looking for a point guard that could run screen and roll action. And Kobe was very excited for a couple of weeks talking about how he loves playing off ball. And he was really excited at the idea of, you know, working a two-man game where somebody else has the ball. And it took like a couple of weeks before eventually everything went back to Kobe having the ball again. And Ramon Sessions ended up very ineffectively parked in a corner. And I don't think Kobe was being insincere about this when they traded for Sessions. I think he was, in the moment, excited at this prospect. I also think Kobe genuinely saw himself as somebody who, every second he did not have the ball, by definition, that was playing off ball.
Off ball.
Like, even if he gave the ball up so he could repost to get the ball back, in that moment of reposting, in Kobe's mind, he was playing off ball.
That was me playing off ball. And so I think, you know, in the totality of it, and this is obviously something that we'll be following for the rest of the season and into next, most likely. Two things I think help this, and, you know, we can leave it here and get to our predictions and some of the other stuff we got left for the show. I think you would agree with me. Two things that help here: continuity, getting to play in the same way with the same people going forward, and, you know, adding. I actually asked Vogel about this. He does not believe adding Anthony Davis substantially changes the type of identity that the Lakers are forging with these LeBron small lineups and stuff like that. And I tend to agree. We can explore that more later in the week. But it's continuity and winning. If the Lakers can manage to get both of those things and start to get a little bit more success, I do think some of the ease that Russ, the dis-ease, as Phil Jackson would have said, around how he's being used will start to naturally resolve itself. So we'll see. Anyway, next, let's get to, we got a little bit left over from our first half review, and then we will get to our big, bold second half predictions. All of that coming up next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Prize Picks. Laker fans, you've been hearing me talk about Prize Picks for months. Have you signed up yet? Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. If you haven't checked it out yet, you are missing out because you're going to love this app for NBA and mixed sports pick'ems. Prize Picks has the best NBA DFS prop game on the market. Prize Picks offers more NBA props than any other DFS prop operator, offers all the superstar players as well as bench players, only recording a handful of minutes each game. And you can do mixed sport entries with Prize Picks. You could do the over on LeBron points with the under on, say, Patrick Mahomes completions in the same entry. Make it weird. Make it fun. Make it interesting. Use the award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. Entries are made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy. Prize Picks has safe, fast withdrawals. So go to Prize Picks today. Use the promo code NBA. Get to the App Store. Download the app. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy.
So before we get to our predictions, both of us had one more thing that we wanted to talk about in terms of reviewing the first half, and it certainly be relevant for framing how we think about the second. We each had a telling stat of the first half. What was yours? You know, it was sort of a number that really to you kind of summarizes why the Lakers are where they are.
Their defensive rebounding rate, 71.7% as of this recording, which would be 21st in the league. And it is closer by percentage points to where they could end up lower rather than higher using NBA.com's numbers. You go to any other metric and they all say the same thing. The Lakers doing a bad job on the defensive glass. And this bears out with the Lakers allowing a lot of second chance points. They are 24th in the league, preventing them opponent points in the paint. 26 offering up 49.2 to opponents. It hurts their ability to trigger the break as much as possible. Like, they're still running a fair amount, but they don't maximize it the way we would like. I think they would like. You don't get as many chances to go against an unset defense, which is where LeBron and even Russ are deadliest. And before people scream about this, because we've heard it on Twitter at Cam Brothers in the comment section of the Locked On Lakers YouTube channel, playing Dwight Moore is not the answer. Dwight's defensive rebounding numbers are some of the worst of his career. He's been fine, but he has not been outstanding, particularly at his position. And with him on the court, they have been a very average team on the defensive glass. They've actually, believe it or not, been better with DeAndre Jordan on the court on the defensive glass, although I'm not recommending him get more playing time either. And then with Dwight, there are other disadvantages you have to account for that aren't going to be offset by any relative strengths. And just the Lakers have got to become better on that defensive glass while staying small the way that they want to. Like, they've got to figure out better ways to either box out, gang rebound, get to loose balls faster. You know, if you look at their hustle stats, not particularly good on this front either, or just become more disruptive to prevent more shots to begin with. Whatever.
I asked for one number, Andy. You know, you've been showing off. You have one number, but then like 12 sub numbers. Like, ooh, look at the guy who completes the assignment with extra credit, you suck up. Jesus.
Whatever. All I was about to say was Anthony Davis's return. That is eventually going to help, but at the end of the day, this defensive rebounding issue is a problem.
Pin a gold ribbon on Andy. I just have one number. My number is 291. That is the number of minutes that Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and Russell Westbrook have played together. It is the sixth most the most common minutesy three-person lineup that the Lakers have had.
Rather than crapping on me getting too deep in the numbers, somebody should have just used a damn dictionary.
A thesaurus or a dictionary. Well, yeah. But at least I have one. This is the sixth most common lineup the Lakers have had, which when you consider that these are the three superstars of this team, is shockingly low. And, you know, you go back to the beginning of the year, and the one consistent refrain that I think both of us had is, you know, these supporting players matter and all this stuff. The margins are important. And, you know, the 5% that this guy adds and whatever. The vast majority of the Lakers' success this season would be dictated by how well the big three performs, how well they perform together, and all of that stuff. That, more than anything, was going to dictate the success of this team. And they have not been able to get those guys on the floor together. And that, to me, as much as anything, summarizes why the Lakers are where they are. You know, the group has a positive net rating when they play, and it's even better when they play without a center. Or, you know, when they, you know, without another traditional big there, DeAndre or Dwight. But yeah, like 209 under 300 minutes for that, for the three best guys on the team together. That explains it to me. So that is stuff that needs to change in the second half if the Lakers are going to get anywhere, knock on wood, when Anthony Davis returns, that starts to happen. So let's look at the second half, Andy, and get into some predictions about where things are going. My first question, because I think, you know, this is front of mind for everyone. Do you think the Lakers will be part of a big trade deadline transaction?
No, I do not. I would be very surprised unless THT plays extremely well over the next month, which is obviously possible, but he would need, I think, to make up a lot of ground to offset a slow start. I think even his recent couple games, which have been better, I don't think they've been good enough to alter perception. And THT is really the only player they have that I think would, I guess, be good enough to elicit the type of trade that, you know, we're talking about. And then, you know, you have to start getting into the nitty-gritty.
By big, we're talking about, like, you know, for example, this week, you know, Jeremy Grant, Miles Turner, Lakers linked to both those teams. They're going to be linked to everybody. I mean, that's not unusual. But, you know, I am sure that they're not making it up. I'm sure the Lakers would love to have Jeremy Grant. I'm sure the Lakers would maybe kick the tires on Miles Turner. But that doesn't mean they're going to be able to do it.
Well, but especially, like, if you're talking about Jeremy Grant, for example, like, the Pistons already have a legit point guard of the future with Cade Cunningham. They also have Killian Hayes, who they just drafted like a year ago. They've got Sadiq Bey as maybe a small forward of the future. He's very good, if nothing else. Like, I mean, they need front court help moving forward more than backcourt or even midcourt. So again, the Pistons would need to be very, very intrigued by Talen Horton-Tucker.
Or it would have to be the best offer that they get.
Sure. I mean, or there's a third team involved or whatever. But again, you start getting more complicated when you start needing third teams, fourth teams, et cetera.
I agree with you. I think they're much more likely to make moves around the margins, you know, where they can flip a second round pick or one of their minimum guys or whatever it might be, and throw in a couple, you know, low value picks or what it might be for a, you know, Kenrich Williams or something like that. That, by the way, I'm not poo-pooing that idea. I agree with you. I don't think they're going to make a big move. How do you think Miles Turner or Jeremy Grant would fit on this team? I like Grant a lot. And even Turner, I think, would allow them at least to have some of the Frank Vogel let's play big tendencies with a little more floor spreading, because Miles Turner can step out to 3-point line, isn't going to clog up the lane.
No, but I mean, he's also not a great 3-point shooter. I mean, he's credible enough, but he's
low 30s.
Yeah, he is basically Anthony Davis at his best as a 3-point shooter, which has never really been enough.
Talk about Anthony Davis being from 3-point range, not what Anthony Davis has ever actually been.
Defensively, Turner and Davis would be a monster front court. I mean, that way, because they both can step out, they both can protect the rim. I think they're both fairly mobile. You know, it's not quite what the Lakers did a couple years ago with Markieff Morris, you know, who I think is a more mobile player and a little bit more malleable than Miles Turner. It would be interesting. I mean, it would definitely be an interesting look. Jeremy Grant feels easier to continue what they've already been doing than Turner. Like, Turner feels like more of a reset with like 30-ish games.
Yeah, Turner, I think, lets them return to their defensive principles of 2020, mm-hmm. you know, the championship season, a little more easily. And then kind of you get into kind of a hybrid version of their offense this year. My bigger question about Turner is whether or not he'd even be happy in an environment. Because, like, part of the reason he's unhappy in Indiana is he doesn't feel like his role is big enough. Like, come here, you're not going to get that. You got a chance to win a title. But, you know, you're behind AD, you're behind Russell Westbrook, you're behind LeBron, you know, all that, like, you know, from an offensive player standpoint, this does not help him. And so, you know, I think it would allow them more flexibility offensively with a true center on the floor than they've had in a really in Frank Vogel's tenure. Because of Turner, again, 35% three-point shooter. It's good enough. But I don't know if Turner would be happy with it. And obviously that matters.
Yeah, for sure. And again, how badly does Indiana need Talen Horton-Tucker?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think either team is that interested, but we'll see. So the trade deadline coming up next month, that is going to be of massive interest in LA and around the league. We got some more big second half predictions, looking at Frank Vogel, looking at the Western Conference playoffs, and we'll do all of that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar. It's the new year, which means New Year's resolutions. And if yours is about getting fit, eating healthier, Built Bar can be part of that plan. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, even better than a lot of candy bars. And you want to eat healthy, but sometimes, man, it gets boring. And a few weeks into it, you're like, screw this. This is not worth it. I'm just going to lean into being an unhealthy individual. It's not necessary because you can go to Built Bars. They're covered in 100%.
Where's my lard stick?
Don't do it, man. Just go to Built Bars. They're covered in 100% real chocolate. Most Built Bars contain just 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, only 4 net carbs, but 17 grams of protein. That's the good stuff. A lot of great flavors to choose from. Coconut almond, mint brownies, salted caramel, cookies and cream. So go to built.com, use the promo code LOCK15, get 15% off your order. Use your large stick to type if you need to. Promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at built.com.
Large stick was my nickname in elementary school.
Wow.
No, it wasn't actually. I do remember though, somebody did once come up to me and poke me in the tummy and go, hee hee. Wow. That was hurtful. Anyway.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Locked On Lakers also brought to you by Bet Online.
It was Bet really Online.
It was. You shouldn't have done that. No. Bet Online would all like to wish you a happy betting new year as we continue the march to the playoffs and beyond. The NFL starting the playoffs this weekend.
I was young. I was 43.
And the NBA. Not so. I'm skinny now, relatively speaking. I weigh less now than I did in high school. I was 426 pounds in high school. Bet Online remains the number one spot for all these sports wagering action for 22. New year, new updated desktop and mobile website. So just sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Use promo code Locked On to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC, right down to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers for 2022. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. Bet Online, where the games start. Andy, as we look to the second half of the season, who is your predicted second half X factor for the Lakers?
It is not a who, Brian. It is a what.
Interesting.
Availability. Continuity, regularity, any other itty that keeps the same players on the court game in, game out for the second half. Like, if the Lakers actually get an opportunity to build a foundation, I think there is a real chance they can start looking like the version of this team that optimists felt were possible. And look, maybe it turns out that the optimists were trying too hard to talk themselves into something that was never really feasible, but we're not going to know for sure one way or the other. And I think this is something the players themselves very strongly feel, unless guys stay healthy. So that to me is the biggest X factor. Once Anthony Davis is back, are they going to be able to keep the same guys on the court?
Yeah, I will tell you, if the Lakers finish the second half of the season with, 291 minutes for those guys times two, slightly under 600 minutes, 282 minutes or 600, whatever, 582 minutes, then you're right. Like, this whole thing isn't going to work. Like, they need much more time with those guys on the floor. I'm actually sticking with Malik Monk. And there are a lot of guys you could choose. You could go with the obvious, Russell Westbrook, in a way, is the X factor. If he ascends to the type of second half performances that people are expecting, because that's what his pattern has been throughout the last few years, that makes a massive difference. For all the angst over Westbrook, we still have to remember he's supposed to be better as the season goes on. But to some degree, I kind of skip that because it's been baked in. Mm-hmm. Like, we are expecting that. We are expecting Anthony Davis to come back. And obviously he needs to play like the elite bubble version of AD for this all to work out. But again, that's something we've kind of talked about this season. I still feel like the guys that we don't know about on that kind of day-to-day consistent basis are THT, and Malik Monk. And I chose Monk because Monk, I think, is going to stay in the starting lineup and play. It will have the opportunity to really default to a lot of big minutes, regardless of who else is around and back in the lineup. And this shift from Malik Monk as an inconsistent bench presence to a guy who could be relied on for 15 to 20 points-ish a night, and that kind of offensive creativity is a huge deal. And we saw the difference, like when he had a really off night on Sunday against Memphis, like the team really suffered. Like it brings a different dynamic. And so for Monk to be able to continue that throughout the second half of the season, I'm rooting for it because it will help the Lakers, but also it will make him a bleep ton of money. And I am rooting for Monk to succeed because he made a massive bet on himself. Not good for the Lakers. Lakers won't be able to keep him if he plays as well as I'm talking about, but it'd still be good for the team and good for him. So,
well, I mean, if he doesn't play very well in the second half, then they start wanting to keep him less. So nobody wins.
That's true. How do you thread the needle? What's the right amount here?
How badly do you want him to play in order to keep him?
That's true. All right. So let's keep going with some of these predictions. Where do you think the Lakers finish, Andy, in the West? Predicted seed for the Lakers finish for the Lakers in the Western Conference.
I am going to be what I think is at least semi-optimistic. I'm going to say sixth. I don't think it is far-fetched that they end up at number five. I don't think they're going to be able to go any higher unless Memphis starts dealing with some serious injuries, because I really do think they are that good. Right. But honestly, I don't particularly believe in Dallas or Denver, the current state, all that's being asked of Jokic, any more than I really feel like I believe in the Lakers in terms of what we've seen with sustainability. I just don't really trust any of these teams immediately ahead of them. And other than maybe the Clippers, I don't trust any of the teams behind them to make a surge. So I'm saying sixth, and they avoid the play-in, which is what's at least immediately very important.
Yeah, I wanted to get them to fifth. And I think it's certainly possible. I agree with you in that regard. They go into Tuesday's games a game and a half behind Dallas for that fifth spot. A half game behind Denver. They're, a lot of these teams, five through nine, they're separated by, they have been separated by 2.5-3 games all season long. But the reason I stuck with sixth as well, and I actually think there's a better chance that they finish seventh than fifth, is because there still is going to be another stretch of probably 10 games, at least without Anthony Davis. It seems like he's not coming back right away. And the strength of schedule for the Lakers gets real tough going forward. They still see Golden State three times in the second half of the season. They got to play Utah, a couple times. They see the Clippers. They see the Mavericks. They see, some of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. Like they play the Sixers. They've got a lot of games against higher quality opponents than they've played all year. They're 21-20 with one of the softer schedules in the NBA. Now, the good thing about that is they do see a lot of teams that they're competing against for these seeds. But I just feel like unless they can get it together quickly, but someone is going to separate a little bit, and the Lakers aren't going to be able to chase because they won't have enough games with Davis. So I'm staying sixth, like you. Yeah. How many playoff rounds do you think they win?
Ooh. I got to be honest. Right now, it does not feel like they go far. I mean, I am totally open towards things changing, and I've been very consistent all season, Brian, and sincerely consistent that it is very difficult to judge how good this team can be because we haven't seen it. Like but that being said, in terms of what we've seen and the top three teams in Phoenix, Golden State, and Utah, I came into this season very, very bullish on Phoenix. I'm willing to concede now, as somebody who'd been skeptical, Golden State's very, very good. And even if Utah is not a team that you believe in getting to the finals because of issues we've seen in the past, they are certainly a team that you believe in winning one round.
If they get to the five, I think it's fair to say Memphis will not enter a playoff series with the Lakers, regardless of who's playing for the Lakers, with even an ounce of fear.
No, but the one, and I do mean one advantage they may have over Memphis is collective experience. To whatever degree you think that matters, you know, going up against Memphis like that. I know they've been in the playoffs before, but the Lakers still have a lot more to lean back on than those guys do. But again, it would be tough right now to confidently predict them going far.
I want to get them through the first round. I really do.
Yeah.
But in my head, my answer is one. Like, they win one round. The follow-up to that question is, okay, who do they beat? I do not have a good answer for that question. I don't have, if the answer is Golden State, no, I do not. I would not pick them to beat the Warriors. Is the answer Phoenix? No, I would not pick them to beat Phoenix right now. Those teams are just too much continuity, too good. Would I pick them to beat Memphis? No, I wouldn't.
Maybe Utah?
Maybe, but only because Utah is a little bit more like a prove-it team. Like, and well, so if they're things the sixth, stay, right, if, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, we got to root for the Grizzlies not to pass Utah in the West. The Grizzlies won 9 in a row. I don't know if that's really punting on the prediction, but it just in my head, like, I can't figure out who they're going to beat, but I also have trouble kicking them out of the playoffs.
Again,
in the first
round. It's really actually a question that is better answered with, say, 5 games to go in the season. I mean, in all honesty,
no, we'll know more. You're right.
Without letting ourselves, not trying to let ourselves off the hook. But again, if we keep talking about we don't know what this team truly can look like, then it's really hard to make that prediction.
I had to put the college fortune on it. I would say they get eliminated in the first round because the track record to this point says they're not good enough to beat any of those top three teams. I just don't. That's a hard thing. Anthony Davis and LeBron James healthy going into the playoffs, with what Russell Westbrook there and Malik Monk playing well, like it's intellectual, like your emotional brain has trouble with that. But all of this actually gets to my last prediction question. Is this the last season Frank Vogel coaches the Lakers?
No, only because I don't think the Lakers will want to pay two coaches at once. It used to be their thing, Brian, at one point. I believe
have to pay him for a year.
Right, but they used to be paying Mike Brown, Mike D'Antoni, and Byron Scott, I believe, all at the same time, which in its own right was kind of gangster. Like, if you really wanted to lean into that, you could make it seem like the equivalent of making it rain at the club. But I get the sense that unless the Lakers miss the playoffs altogether, and I don't think that's
they're
going to
not
going to
miss the playoffs. Western Conference isn't that good.
Or there's somebody out there that is just definitively better than Vogel, more exciting than Vogel, more favored by LeBron. And it's worth noting, I think David Fizdale already blew his chance optically to pull a Ty Lue in Cleveland. I think they're just going to let Vogel's contract, with the 1-year extension expire, or maybe fire him halfway through next season. But I don't feel right now like they're just going to eat the money.
We don't even know how much money. For all we know, Frank Vogel's extension next year is an hourly. he could be a paid intern next season. We have no idea what he's being paid. I don't think he's back next year. I think the Lakers have made it abundantly clear over the last couple seasons, and Rob Pelinka has made it clear that he believes to some degree that coaches are interchangeable, and that they don't have institutional confidence in Vogel. I think that 1-year deal was extraordinarily telling. I don't think Vogel wants to go into next year with another 1-year deal, like extended past this one, all of that stuff. And I just think the writing to me has been on the, it's a disappointing season. It hasn't quite worked. Two of those in a row, can't blame him necessarily on Frank, but I just feel like there's no loyalty to Vogel with this unless they go on some sort of deep run. But if they don't, they're one and out or none and out or whatever it is, I don't think he's back next year.
It's certainly possible.
Prediction.
I'm not advocating for it, but that's
my prediction.
I don't think it would be crazy if it turned out you were right.
All right. So much more to come. Wednesday's game is going to be an interesting one as the Lakers hit the road for a little while after playing a long stretch at home. Reminder to subscribe to Locked on Lakers on YouTube. And thanks again to everyone for making Locked on Lakers your first listen of every day. We'll see everybody on Thursday.